Welcome back to Rude Dude.
Welcome to the Rude Dude Recovery Podcast with your host and resident wet brains, Cam and Hen, two dudes navigating the waves of wellness. Thanks for being here. This week, the dudes sit down with Hen's mom, Deb. Deb shares her experience of growing up with an alcoholic father, the generational lineage of alcoholism in their family, surviving an abusive relationship, and the trials of having an alcoholic son. Grab a box of tissues and please enjoy Season 2, Episode 9 of the Rude Dude Pod. Welcome back to the Rude Dude Podcast, the show that puts some pep in your step, takes some weight off your plate, and reminds you that haters are going to hate. I am your host, Henny Lokes the Lobster, your favorite recovering alcoholic, with my pal, my buddy, my guy, Cameron Shrimp Daddy Cree, the Davis, the Cree, the Davis, the Davies. And how are you, pal?
You know what, man? I'm doing good. Yesterday was my birthday, so that was riveting. Another year.
Was it riveting?
It was riveting, dude. Yeah, yes. You know, a 36-year-old birthday with the family. You know, just sat here, did candles and stuff. I got a very unique gift from Ashley. I got like that MyHeritage DNA testing thing, and so. Since I'm already in the system from being arrested, I figured why not, you know, send my DNA away so I could, you know, they can turn me into some AI sex bot in the future or something like that. But now I have this whole family tree, dude, that it like updated, and I'm seeing my mom's whole side. Her mom is like these super German people, like her great great grandmother, like his name's Johann von Wenzel and stuff. Like, it's a trip, dude. It's crazy seeing how far it goes back. I'm very enthused to see what the DNA comes back saying, but I'm doing good, man. Good day today, brother. How are you doing?
I'm anti that. I don't know why. There's just certain things, and they're going to find the cure to cancer in my blood and make billions off of it and not give me a dime because that's the thing. They don't have to give you anything if they find whatever in your DNA. So I don't know.
I think that's just the 23andMe one, dude. This MyHeritage one is pretty top notch. It had all the reviews.
It does seem interesting, though. It would be cool to know. Yeah. I'm doing well. I was grinding in the backyard all day, as you know. Didn't get to go to the gym, so I'm going to be in terrible shape for this very special guest we have.
It's a special one.
But I'm doing well, and I'm ready, and man, should we jump into it?
Yeah, let's just get right into it, bro. Here is our esteemed guest for our listeners who do not know yet. This is Henry's mom, Deb. Deb, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Mom. The very sweetest lady that I know, the woman who raised me, who stuck by me through everything, never gave up on me, my mom. Hi, Mom.
That's our job.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, Cameron and I actually talked about this last week. Cameron brought it up, but I had the same sentiment. We were talking about, you know, homeless people and sometimes judging them or being annoyed with them. But he mentioned, and I 1000% agree, he and I are just lucky to have the families that we had because we could very easily be on the streets if we didn't have the kind of support we had.
That's correct. When I see homeless people out there, I think of that all the time. I'm wondering what happened to their family. Why are they homeless? But, you know, a lot of the homelessness out there are mental illness, not just addiction, yeah. But you know, they have the mental illness and they can't cope with life anyway. But yeah, I'm glad you guys have loving parents.
Me too.
It's right. Nice not to be under a tree.
So let me, for all of the listeners and everyone, be the first to say thank you. And I love and
oh, well, thank you.
Yes,
thank you. It wasn't always easy.
No, I'm sure it was.
Am I supposed to tell the truth on this show?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just
yeah,
let me know how honest you want me to be.
100%.
Give it all. Yep.
Yeah, it wasn't easy.
Well, I think we'll get to that, but where we want to start is you grew up with an alcoholic father, which probably makes it twice as bad that you ended up with an alcoholic son. But again, we'll get to that. So you wanted to talk a little bit about the family history of alcoholism.
Yeah, so my dad came from a family who I was unaware if they had alcoholism in their past, but he is Native American, and he had Native American in him. And apparently there's like a history of conflict with Native American and alcohol. You know, they can't handle it very well. And it's just kind of been proven over time. So there was that. But my mom, on the other hand, who was married to my father, grew up in a home with an alcoholic father. So they were poor. There were three kids. Her dad came from England to America to become a pharmacist. And when he got here, he kind of became lonely. He came from a family of 11, and he was without his mom and dad here, didn't have any of his brothers and sisters. And I think he just kind of started drinking instead of finishing school. So he never became what he came out here for, which was a pharmacist. And he became a janitor. I guess in my mom's childhood, she had a functional alcoholic as a dad for a while, but their life wasn't all that great because he couldn't hold jobs.
And he didn't realize his goal.
And I never knew this. So just so you guys know, this is a weird thing. My mom never talked about it. So I didn't know. I learned about this later.
Fun fact of the day, I didn't know this either.
If you go back far enough, Cameron, this applies to you because you just got a cool birthday gift. In your family tree, there could be some alcoholism in there, you know. And back in their day, I don't think they called them alcoholics, right? They were just drunks, or what's wrong with them? They didn't realize it was really a disease. But this did cause a lot of hardship in my mom's family's youth. And they had my grandmother, though, which she's the sweetest pie. I hope I take after her, but you never know. But anyway, she was amazing. She made sure the kids played tennis. They had their school. They were dressed for school. My mom didn't have that many clothes. She didn't have that many shoes. And her sister would inherit her stuff because her sister was younger. So, you know, I found all this out from my aunt later. Again, like my mom never shared with me. And how I met my grandfather, he was remarried. He had divorced my grandmother divorced him, actually, but always still loved him. He taught me how to play pinochle. And so I just thought this guy was cool. Matter of fact, Henry's namesake is my grandfather because I loved my grandfather. Nice. So the story has a happy ending. Yes, he was recovered. He made it. Lucille was his second wife. She was a strong Lutheran, and she would have no alcohol in the house. And he had to really toe a strict line with her and their marriage. And he became probably a better friend and father to his children. But again, like my uncle and my mom never talked about it, but my aunt has been opening up to me about it over the years because she has a son who is a recovered alcoholic. So we have a lot of interesting conversations. So she said, because she was the youngest at home, that's when his alcoholism got worse. My mom and my uncle were off to college, and now my aunt's stuck at home raising a kid, basically, because that's what my grandfather kind of turned into, according to her. And she would dilute his alcohol with vinegar. He would take a swig.
He didn't
notice a swig
that.
Of the alcohol. Oh yeah, he noticed. He was like, "Who took my booze away?" You know. And my aunt said, "Dad, it's pretty sad when I have to be the parent here in the room." You know. Yep. So, yep. And it had a good ending. He recovered and he stayed sober for the rest of his life. And I think he died in his 80s. So moving forward, we go to my father. and his father died when he was 7, and he had served in the military, and he died from a chemical that had gotten into his lungs. And so my father grew up without a father. So I don't know much about my great-grandfather or his dad. But anyway, my dad had 2 sisters, and he was the man of the house, kind of had responsibilities early, went off to the service, sent his check home to his mom for his mom to save his money. And when he got out of the service, his mom had spent all his money. Ooh. So my dad had to start over, go to college. You know, he graduated from Sac State with a degree in social studies and history, and he met my mom, they got married. And I think in the beginning, I just think it was more of a social drink. Marijuana wasn't a big thing back then, and doing drugs in my mom and dad's era wasn't a big thing. That came later, like in the, you know, 60s and 70s. I personally didn't notice my dad having a drinking problem in my early childhood. When I did notice it, it was probably when I was around 10. His behavior was a little different. And I'm not saying I came from the Leave It to Beaver family, but my mom and dad never fought, and they got in a fight one night. And so I was like, oh, that's weird. Why are they fighting? So that's when it started to unravel. My brother left home. He was 18. He went into the Coast Guard. So now I'm home alone with 2 dysfunctional parents. And my world's starting to fall apart. And I was about 12 at that time. So they both worked. My dad would put a swig in his coffee every morning before he left for work. And I said, that's not normal, right, Dad? You're starting off with alcohol, breakfast of champions. He would drink at lunch, probably drank during the day. You know, I don't know. He had a desk. He could put his liquor in there.
He was, Mom, a probation officer?
He started as a probation officer. Then he became what they called a traffic hearing officer, which is a judge in the traffic court for juveniles 18 and under.
With the sauce in his desk drawer.
You got a traffic citation, you would come see my dad, and he decided if you were going to keep your license or not. I tried not to announce my last name at school because a lot of kids wanted to say, hey, I got a ticket. Can you go talk to your dad for me? So this was in high school, and I was like, don't even tell people what my last name is. It's Roe. Yeah. So now I'm starting to notice my dad is unavailable because he was my best friend. I got along better with my dad than my mom, always did. And I'm not throwing my mom under the bus. She was a good person. But I do think when you have trauma in your childhood and you don't get help and you don't address it, it affects how you are with attachment. And my mom just, to me, had problems attaching herself to people, you know, and my dad was warm and friendly. Henry could vouch for this. Henry loved my father, where my mom was a little bit more put off, you know, but I'm going to call it her mechanism of coping and dealing with the trauma she went through.
You think that her family wasn't very warm?
No. Her mom was very loving, and her dad was pretty loving. It's just that what was traumatic for her was they would get kicked out of homes. You know, they'd had to find a new home to live. And I learned about all this later. Trust me, if I had known this when I was younger, I would have gotten to understand my mom a little bit better. I didn't know she was poor. I didn't know she grew up barely having food on the table.
Well, that kind of speaks to your mom's personality, though, too, that she never even had that conversation.
Right. Exactly. I mean, there are some crazy things, like, you know, when she passed, I found all these photos and I went, what? I've never seen these photos before. You know, so it's like she never shared the warm and fuzzy with me. And would I like to have had that? Absolutely, because I had it with my father. So you could imagine, you know, only having one parent that connected with me and the other one didn't. And I lost that one that was connected with me to alcohol. I was pretty traumatized. I was only 12. So I had 6 years of being alone.
Before you go on, I noticed a very interesting parallel, which was that your brother left and left you at home with a somewhat tough relationship going on with your parents. I experienced the same thing when Mac left for school, because my sister's 3 years older than me. She left for school, and you and Dad were probably in the worst phase of your marriage, and I felt like I was the one stuck there trying to mediate and kind of be in the middle of it. So I'm familiar with that position, and it's interesting that we both experienced that.
Yeah, and on that note, it's a very important stage, which I was going to share with you. Eric Erickson was somebody I studied when I did my early childhood development courses. And the stages of development that he talks about, and there's eight of them, identity versus confusion. That's stage five. And it's when you're about 12 to 18 years old. And it's like, this is a super important time for you in your life and where you get your ego and where you get your confidence. And so I became extremely shy, a little opposite of Henry. He was very outgoing, you know, but I became very shy and turned in. Guys would ask me out and I would get not interested. You know, I didn't want to date. It was just interesting. I just didn't feel like I had any support at home. And I actually felt like I was on my own. So that part was kind of interesting too. And I don't know if I've ever shared this with Henry or Mackenzie, so I'll just kind of share it now. I ran away from home at 16 and I was gone for almost 3 months. And I ran away to a farm where one of my neighbors had moved to. And she had called my parents and told them I was there after about 3 days. But I wasn't doing well at that time. So this was when my dad was drinking really heavy. My mom, you know, had her work. And of course, I'm not attached to her very well. We're fighting like crazy. We are not getting along. And so I took off and just said, you know, I just need to clear my head for a while. And Jane, I'll never forget her, my neighbor, she was so loving. And she said, you know, I'm going to keep in touch with your parents, let them know you're doing okay, and that you're helping me out on the farm for the summer. And I thought that was probably a good thing because
Did
I didn't
want your parents just kind of accept it?
Yeah, my dad, of course, wanted to come get me. But she said, I don't think that would be a good idea. She kind of stuck up for me. She said, you know, when you're sober, you could come get her, you know. So she kind of let him know, I know you're drinking and I'm not letting your daughter go home with that. And my mom kind of didn't have the responsibility of me. So it kind of made her life easier to go to work and, you know, just give herself
I was going to say I could kind of see where your mom would just kind of be like, well, okay, we'll see you at the end of the summer.
Right. So that was kind of an experience. And then I came back home because I got a job at Bel Air. And it's crazy how I survived. I don't even know how I did all this. I either walked or rode my bike to work. I didn't have a car. My parents weren't buying me a car. So I had to start saving my money up, you know, from work. I was still in high school. We move fast forward thinking it's so dysfunctional at my home. I graduate from high school and now my mom and dad are separating and I'm like going to be stuck at home with my dad. My mom's leaving. She got her apartment and I'm thinking, I don't want to live here. So I got my own place.
No help from mom and dad.
You guys get ready for this. I made $79 a week. Yes. And I'm going to live in my own apartment. Okay, first of all, I got to pay rent. Okay, so back then, I'm not saying rent was real high or anything, and I had a roommate, but can you imagine living on $79 a week and eating, putting gas in your car and all that? And here my dad is drinking away, you know, but they both told me, don't come home. Don't ask us for money, you know. So my dad kept drinking, and I finally found a rehab place for him, and I got him in. So this was his first one. And it was in the Bay Area. And I think the first one was a month. The next time he went to rehab, it was 3 weeks. And then the last time he went to rehab, he had to put a year in. He had to go to rehab, and then he had to go into sober living. And so the good news out of all this was my dad became sober. He was in his 50s and he quit smoking. But I don't want to say that the rehab cured him. I think what cured my dad and what scared him was he had a heart attack and stroke. And I happened to be there the day that all this happened. And I got him to the hospital, and he had lost his speech for almost a year. And the heart attack was, you know, because of smoking. And so he quit both, but he went to rehab just to get reinforcements, do AA and all that. And then he decided to give back, and he became a counselor for alcoholics and, you know, what do they call him? Sponsor. And he said that that's when he knew he was going to be okay, because he was giving back to something that had taken his life away. And so that's what he shared with me. And that's what I always held on to, because that's when I noticed I got my dad back. He was the happy man I grew up with. And I didn't know my son at the time would have this problem, but I held on to that little nugget of information.
That's a wild story. And I think there's so many layers to it, right? And it's kind of fitting, because I'm sitting here, like I said, in the beginning of the show, like looking at this family tree, and I'm trying to, you know, figure all this stuff out through pictures and whatnot, but I have no idea of what is going on underneath that story, mm-hmm. right? Like, hey, you know, when you finally figure out, you know, hey, this might be the way that my mom, you know, just coped with life, right? Yeah. And it takes, unfortunately, a sufficient amount of time for you to come to that revelation, yeah. right? Or some other conversations. And then seeing, you know, your dad, you know, go down this path that Henry and I are very comfortable with is so difficult. And I can't really express this enough, that I didn't realize how hard it was on everybody else until I got sober and saw people in active addiction.
Yeah.
Because it's so freaking heartbreaking, and it's so traumatic and stressful and just chaos. And for a child and somebody growing up, especially a parent that you confided in, I imagine that even carried a little bit of trauma with you throughout your entire life,
yeah.
you know, and that's also a motivating factor for me, is that, you know, my daughter who's 4 and my son who's 1, if I keep staying on this path, they don't have to see that side, right? So there's more to what Henry and I are doing. I'm trying to break that curse,
right?
Like, and I didn't grow up with alcoholic parents, but you get what I'm saying.
Exactly.
I'm just glad that, you know, you were able to see your dad come out on the other side, because, you know, he was, you know, one heart attack away or a stroke. He might not even have made it. And that would have been his story. And that'd be sad, right? Like, hey, my mom was cold. My dad died in fucking alcoholic, you know, excuse my language.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a good story to conclude with my mom, even though she kind of abandoned my father, you know, and didn't support his addiction or his disease. She moved on with her life, and that was good for her. And my brother, same thing. My brother, he didn't have the energy to give to my father. They didn't go along well when my dad was drinking. So I was it. I was the only family for my dad who believed he could come out on the other side. And I had no training in that. You know, we're talking, I'm in my young adulthood, you know? So when my dad got well, then there's that thing of trust. And because my dad was the person I confided with and loved and wanted to be with, I had to wait till I could trust him again. And I have to tell both of you this, there's no moment in time when a person's gone through trauma like this, that they can say, okay, I'm on the other side now, I've recovered, or this has done it for me, and now I can bring you back in. Because my father kept asking me, you know, when are you going to speak to me again? And he didn't mean that in a sense like the conversation you and I are having today. He's talking about that. I just was short with him and still always told him I loved him. But I didn't have that energy to give him until I trusted him again. And I started dating Henry's father at this point, and I never told Henry's father that my dad was an alcoholic. Mike met my dad when he was sober. And so he has this different, like my grandfather image, right? How I saw my grandfather and how I admired my grandfather. So Mike has this image of my dad as, wow, this guy is really cool. You know, he's lived a long life and blah, blah, blah. And then one day, just out of the blue, I just said, you know, my father's a recovered alcoholic. And he goes, what? And I know, what? And I said, I just can't even talk about it yet. So that's why I've never brought it up. And he goes, I had no idea. So your dad, Henry, didn't know the type of pain I was going through. And I didn't know the type of pain your dad was going through, because Mike's father abandoned all four children when Mike was the oldest boy at 9. So his father walked out on the whole family at 9 years old and never looked back.
Interesting fun fact while we're there, my last name is not technically Sheridan, but my dad chose not to take the last name of the man who abandoned him and his mom.
Exactly. He took the man that was the most father figure in his life at the time and, you know, was there for him in his childhood. So your dad also had his trauma. So, you know, we both had a couple of walls between us when we met and started dating. And all had to do with attachment and trust. So that's a huge thing. And if you guys ever want to take a deep dive down a rabbit hole, just pull up Eric Erickson's Stages of Development. It's the 8 psychosocial stages. And it just really, you know, just gives you a good understanding of what you kind of have to go through in order to get through to the end of life. So we're talking not just all your childhood stages, we're talking young adult, adulthood, and it kind of sets you up on your success or failures, kind of create who you are and at the time of when it happens. And you kind of have to get through that stage in order to step up to the next stage. So it's kind of fascinating. And I would say for Mike and I, our relationship was very healthy in the beginning, very strong. He was starting some businesses, and I don't know if it's worse being an alcoholic or a workaholic, but they're both aholics. And, you know, so Henry's father is definitely a workaholic, and that can get in the way of building a family and making sure that you're available, just like an addict. You know, when I talk about being available to Henry, he knows what I'm talking about. He was a father at a young age, and I said, you're not available for Katie, and you got to be somebody she can trust and not be afraid to come to when she needs you. Because, you know, children love to be nurtured and loved. And trusting their parents, right? Nurtured and loved. So Mike just wasn't real available while I was raising Mackenzie and Henry. because he was starting companies and he was very much married to his work.
I have to say, too, with that, Mac and I kind of felt like it was almost like he worked out of town or he didn't live at home. That's how much he worked and how he was. He'd come home at like 9 p.m. He'd come home after we went to bed. You were talking about trauma, and his trauma was, you know, as the oldest kid, he, you know, when you get put into that older sibling and no father role, you are kind of the father figure and you have to look after your younger siblings. And also his story was that when he would get in trouble, if any of the other siblings did anything or whatever, it always came back on him because he should have been paying attention or he should have been watching them or whatever. And his right. His mom also grew up very poor. I remember we heard about her living in chicken coops and all that. And that was like Great Depression type stuff. So I think the thing for him with the workaholic, and we talked about this with another guest, is like the scarcity mentality, the idea that it can all be taken away and there won't be enough and we won't have enough. And I think that's where his like workaholism came from. But the other thing that I think, one of the things with him, and this is kind of an older viewpoint, but but what about this house I provided you with? He kind of thought that the financial things and the material things could substitute for his time. And what we mm-hmm. wanted was his time. You know, when you're a kid, you don't, it's nice to have the stuff and it's nice to do the fun things and all that. But really, I just want you to sit on the floor and like play with me, you know? And I think he was the same way with you. You know, what about this beautiful house we live in? It's like, I don't give a fuck about the house. I want you, you know? So I think that was something that we both experienced.
His idea of a date, let's say a trip to get away together, we would get the beautiful place. I'm like, all right, let's go on a hike. And he would have his cell phone and he'd get a work call and boom. Now our beautiful hike has turned into a work call. And I'm like, aren't you off work? Can't somebody back at the office handle that? And I think the other part of that, you know, even being a workaholic is also being a control freak. You know, he didn't want to let go of what he felt responsible for to a
fault,
you know? Yeah. A fault.
Cameron gets to experience that with me now.
What?
Yes, I actually am vicariously living the same life as you, Deb, because I'm married to Henry as well, and he happens to be Mike Sheridan 2.0.
Yeah.
But I think that you know, there's something to that. I'm sitting here trying to psychoanalyze Superboss here, but it's the, you know, when you talk about his childhood, right? Like you talk about, hey, he was responsible for the other siblings, and if they got in trouble, you know, it was on him.
Right.
And so he took that literally. That diagram or that way of living to his work, right? And it was a prime example of you just saying that, like, hey, he couldn't let go of control because if he wasn't keeping an eye on it, something bad was going to happen,
right?
And so I have to keep eyes on it at all times,
right?
And so you know, it's weird how we can do that, right? As humans, I find it so interesting how we can take something like that from such a young age. And if you don't recognize that you're doing it, it just comes with you. It sounds like it's like that sad movie Click, dude, with Adam Sandler. Yeah. It literally sounds just like that. Yeah. It literally does. That movie hit me hard, man. I always try not to work too hard just because I don't like it's Adam Sandler.
Kind of a paradigm for all families, because if you think about it, two of them working, that's really a struggle, and you have to parent together to provide for these kids that you brought into the world. Right. And I was working also, but I not only did working and raising the kids, but I also took on the entire household. Like I ran the house and I didn't get much help from him. So he would go, well, you got two kids, you know, so Henry knows this part. He'd have to mow the lawn. And, you know, it was just one of those things of just trying to keep up all the time, you know. And I'm like, God, he works so much. You think we could afford at least one aide here, like maybe a housekeeper? just so I could go to the grocery shop, you know, and get the meals on and, or, you know, how about a gardener? Anyway, I mean, talk about making all the money. He doesn't want to let go of any of the money.
I was the gardener. I was the fence repairman. I was the landscaper. I was the plumber. But what's really funny about this is I'm currently doing a project in my backyard, and I just mentioned this to Cameron. I've been thinking about it. Growing up, we didn't hire anyone to do anything. Like you just said, I was it, me and Dad were it, and Mac and you, everybody, we all pitched in, we all worked. And my family, hey, can Nick stay the night? And it would be if he wants to do yard work in the morning. That's what my parents would say. They can stay the night if they want to do yard work in the morning. Like, we were working. I worked when on the
weekend.
Well,
we
had a
quarter acre property. It wasn't small, you know.
So, and I hated it. As you can imagine, I hated it. My friends like, hey, we're going to go skateboard. No, I got yard work. You know, I absolutely hated it. Now, fast forward, I'm doing this project in my yard, and it would cost a landscape company, I guarantee, every bit of $20,000 to do this project, and I'm probably going to get it done myself for less than five. So it all comes back. It all comes back eventually.
You're welcome.
Yeah. and now I am grateful, but I have to say, I'm sitting here, and it's not the first time that I've had this realization. But it really makes me so sad to think that you had to go through that with your dad. And then you had to experience it all over again with me. And I just was thinking, like, even to have to do that once is really hard, and with the parent it's really hard, but then to have to go through that with your child, which I can only imagine, you know, what once you become a parent, anybody who's a parent knows the kind of love and attachment you have to your child. So to have to go through that and see that, and as you're telling that story, it just made me really sad that you had to experience it again with me. And, I mean, first I just want to apologize because, like Cameron said, we don't realize. We sit here and tell this biggest fucking lie that we've ever told, which is that I'm not hurting anybody but myself. It's just me. Mm-hmm. And we just know that's not true, but it makes me so sad.
Well, it makes it easier to pass blame on something else, right? Not take responsibility when you're not being responsible. You know, it's harder work to be the better person a lot of times. And first of all, going back to my father and mother, I did resent them for a while, because who puts their child out at 18 with nothing? And I'm talking about, you know, hey, at least support me to get a life skill, a plumber, electrician, you know, college would have been nice. They did not pay for anything for me, not a thing. I had to take the slow, long road. But I started to kind of have an optimistic attitude about it. And I said, well, I could resent my parents, or I could thank them, because I don't know if I have the gene. I've never tested myself for it. We did have Henry test it, and he does have it. I could have become an alcoholic. I could have been a drug addict, right? But I had to work so dang hard to live and survive from week to week. And we're talking 7 years of my life, from 18 till my 25th birthday. And, you know, I could really support myself. I had benefits and could go to college now. But those years were a struggle. Matter of fact, the roommate I got, and I'll put a shout out to the Plakuses, Peggy Plakus, her dad owned Chick's Produce. And he provided us with a box of produce every week. He came to our apartment and knocked on our door and said, got your food for the week. And so I learned how to take pasta and rice and vegetables and turn that into food. And that's how I survived. Had I not gotten that food from Mr. Plakis, I would have starved to death. But yeah, I had resentment. And then I said, I need to be more optimistic about this. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So I wasn't dead. And I then had children, and I didn't know Henry was going to make me even stronger, but he did. And I'm not going to sit here and say it wasn't hard, Henry, because it was. But also, I think I had the tools to be your rock. I think I was given to you as a mother because I was provided with tools from my teen through my young adult that gave me the center for you and kind of, you know, just believed that I can get you to the other side. My whole time, I just kept saying, he just has to get to the other side like my dad and my grandfather, and everything's going to be great. Because once my grandfather made it there and my dad, they were great men. I don't look at them as any different because they had the disease, because they were addicts. I look at them still, love them to death, just like I love you to death, that you're still my people, but you just had a roadblock, you know, and you had to figure out how to unblock that road. And I think it's a journey that each person has to take. But if you don't have the support and love coming from somewhere, somebody, which I know your dad loved you an awful stinking lot at that time, he did not want to lose you either. You can get pretty lost. And bringing us to a full circle moment of the girl that you started out with Katie, you know, she's pretty alone. She's a little lost right now. Mm-hmm. And
she also doesn't have the benefit of really having any family to help her.
We're talking many, many years of going back and forth from being an addict to getting clean, to being an addict to getting clean, and lots of struggle. And she has no one. I mean, I reached out to somebody that should be a family member of hers, and he wanted nothing to do with it. And of course, she hasn't exactly made great strides in the relationships with her two daughters, but I know she loves them. So not saying that I'm not going to be there for her, but I am the only mother figure in her life.
See, I think that's so interesting too, because I'm on this tying in the past and bringing it to the future. You know how when you ran away at 16, how that family took you in, right? Mm-hmm. And they helped you and said that, look how, see, even I believe that interaction is imprinted on you even to this day, because look what you're doing with this experience right there, right? Like, hey, yeah. She has absolutely nobody to love. Yeah. She has no mom figure. She doesn't feel safe. There's something else going on. I got to be the one to do it. And hats off to you for doing it, because you know damn well, I mean, from the extent of this conversation, how chaotic dealing with somebody in active addiction is.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. It's crazy. It's madness. It's lies. It's manipulation. And it's a straight up just lack of accountability. Mm-hmm. Now, I do have one question for you really quick. Were there any telltale signs where you saw Henry kind of progressing and you said maybe an oh shit moment, like, oh, this looks familiar. I know what this is.
Yep. I do have that moment. I was in Europe with him. Mm. You remember that?
I remember. When I almost died in Italy. Yeah, we had Brian Chandler on. We talked about that moment.
Yeah, and he wasn't 18 yet. So his father and I had choices. And I would say it was probably our biggest disagreement in our marriage. I wanted to send Henry away to a outback, and Mike didn't want to spend the money. And I said, oh, it'll be the best money you've ever spent in your life. Trust me. I have 7 success stories to tell you about parents that did that.
That's a theme in our life. Dad didn't want to pay for it.
And I didn't really have a lot of the money at that point. I needed him to come up with the other half. I had half of it. He was adamant about you not going there. And so, Cameron, on that note, we were in Moulin Rouge. And Henry, the table ordered a bottle of bubbly. And if that's all Henry drank, why would he be so drunk that he couldn't walk afterwards, right? So I was like, you all go back to the hotel. I'm going to hang with my son here. I need to have a serious conversation with him. So at that point, and I still don't know if Henry was pocketing liquor and he was drinking hard liquor and mixing it with wine, but he definitely was inebriated beyond what he had drank where we were. And so right there, I shared with Mike that it's not just a high school party thing like most teenage kids do. I said, it's different. And Mike said he'll grow out of it. And then I saw it again. He had Heather drive him home. And he had gotten into some kind of a scuttle with another boy. And he had fallen on an umbrella stand. Do you remember that, Henry?
Was that when my toenail got ripped off? Or was that a different
time? A lot of things happened. I had to keep him awake, Cameron, because the hospital told me he probably had a concussion. And, you know, as a parent, you don't know if you're dealing with a concussion or if you're dealing with a drunk, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Or both.
So then I took him to the doctor the next day, and he kind of had like a mild concussion. So we kind of had to deal with that. And some boy had pushed him down the stairs.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's like, when I lost my toenail. That was at Ryan Spalding's house. It was her big brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I forget what I said. He didn't like it, though.
But he couldn't keep his balance the next day. He was, you know, out of balance. And he's not drinking anymore at this point. So I knew something was wrong there. So that's about when I knew Henry had some issues. And I shared those with Mike. I went to a deaf ear and he didn't want to believe it. And I don't want to, you know, throw your dad under the bus, but I do believe he was in denial in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Then you went off to a senior camp trip and I said, all right, let's be smart. Don't get into any trouble.
Henry was, in fact, not smart. Spoiler alert.
And got in trouble.
Get a call from the jail. You know, Mom, I don't even want to talk to you. And I go back to bed. He calls the next day. But wait, can't you bail me out of here? I go, you put yourself in there. You know, enjoy. But, you know, so all these things kind of kept adding up to bad choices. And I don't, you know, I'm not a stick in the mud, like don't party, but you know, at some point there's got to be kind of a, let's make kind of smart choices so I can grow up and also be productive and responsible. And then he found out he had a daughter.
Conceived at that senior camping trip.
That kind of changed Henry's world. Because I do think he did have a little bit of struggle over here, but I also think he did want to go to college and he wanted to make something of himself. And I wanted to give that to both my children. I wanted to put both Mackenzie and Henry through college because my parents didn't do that for me. So it's kind of a window of time, you know, like when you graduate out of high school, you want to go to college and do something for yourself, or at least a trade school, you know, either one. I'm good with either. And anyway, he started struggling, and he was in Long Beach, and his sister was there too. She was in college, and Henry started drinking quite a bit, quite often, and having trouble, you know, getting things done, being responsible. And it was really sad to see.
I was very alone in Long Beach. Mac was there, but she was busy with school and her friends and crew. And I went with Ashley Marzigliano, and then she didn't like it or whatever, and she ended up going home. So I was there alone, and I didn't really make friends at my community college, and I just felt very alone. And I would sit and drink by myself in my apartment every single night.
Yeah. So it wasn't a good recipe for Henry for success, that's for sure. And we did bring him back home because he wasn't really being productive as a college student. Henry had everything he needed to get into a four-year college, except the emotional maturity.
Except a senior year of high school.
No, you finished your senior year. I had you finish.
No, I took my GED. I did not technically finish school.
You had one class left to do. And
yeah, I was in college while my friends were still in their senior year of high school because I got expelled my junior year, which we talked about on here
before. The end of the year.
Now, another thing I want to know is, do you think that my situation put more stress on you and Dad's relationship?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. We were already having trouble, but, you know, go back to your 12th birthday right around then. And this has nothing to do with you or Mackenzie. Your dad got that cancer and I got called back home. We were in Utah. Your dad was at the doctor and they said to get our affairs in order. He may not come out of the surgery. So that's what we did. And Pat Walton, our neighbor, took you and Mackenzie for the rest of that week while your dad had to undergo a major surgery. So that was the first stressor in our marriage. And he had about a year that he took to recover, learning how to swallow, speak again, still working. And then you come into the mix with, you know, you're being a teenage boy and partying and being silly. Mackenzie's going off and doing her college thing. And she's, you know, staying very focused. And we're hoping for the same route for you. And it didn't quite work. And there was nothing I could do right and nothing I could do wrong at that point for you and in your dad's eyes. You know, anything I did was right or wrong. So, you know, just it definitely put a lot of stress in our relationship. But
that wasn't just with me. That was with anything and everything.
Correct. And his solution to things were a lot different than my ideas. And, you know, and Cameron knows this. He's married and has children. When you're in a marriage and you have children together, you want a parent on the same side. You do not want to split your parenting apart because those kids will pit one parent against the other because you guys are professionals at it. So I didn't have that support with your dad. I didn't have the support of my parenting, even though I took all the classes and have an early childhood degree and have my degree and all that. His ideas didn't concur with mine.
I can only imagine the strain. Like, it's like one of my biggest fears, right? Like sitting here, I look at my kids and you've hit it right spot on. Addison is, like I said, she'll be 5 in August and she's already trying to do that where mom will tell her no. And she's coming over to me to try to ask the same question. I think it's hilarious, but yeah, you need that united front. it's so scary to think that one of my kids might turn out like that, right? Mm-hmm. And then to think about the strain of, you know, what that would even do to my wife, because, you know, Ashley met me in active addiction and now is married to me in sobriety. Like, you know, this is all hypotheticals, but it's just like, it's like, oh shit, well, what would that do? And you know, I know that, hey, there's nothing really I can do except maybe send them to treatment and hope that they get it. So yeah, it's just this nightmare scenario. And I can only imagine the toll that it took on you guys on top of everything else.
Yeah. And I think, separating from Mike was very scary for me because I wasn't the breadwinner. Mm-hmm. And, here I go again, back to my 18, my youth, and going back to living this hard life that I had. And, anyway, it is a little hard to talk about because I've come over the other side. I'm really happy. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, it's a struggle. And, I always think about people who are having a bad day. You don't know, what that person's been through. So I always try to give people a little grace every day in my life, because I know what I've walked through, and I'd like some people to give me grace if they can, because I need it sometimes. Not lately. I'm super happy and where I'm at, and his dad and I are great friends now, but I think separating made us stronger, together for Henry, because we didn't have to live the day to day together. And, we started bouncing ideas off of each other and listening to each other better. So, you know, yes, it ended a family for Henry and Mackenzie, but we gained, something maybe better for Mackenzie and Henry. His dad came to understand me better by not being around me full time. And, I think that was a good thing for Henry, because he got all the stuff that Henry wanted in his childhood. He got from his father in his adulthood. His dad stepped up and became available for Henry.
I disagree that it ended a family for me. I think our family became better and stronger than ever after you guys separated, because when you guys were together, it was turmoil and it was difficult for all of us. And, you know, we've always said this, but when you guys finally said, yeah, we're getting a divorce, me and Mac were like, about time. Thank God. You know, we watched you guys fight and argue and everything else our whole lives. And like you said, we now have an incredible dynamic. And I always preface this with, you know, my dad has changed more than most people ever do in their whole life. So I want to give him all the credit, because he is really awesome now, and we all have a great relationship with him. Mm-hmm. And he's an awesome grandpa to my daughter, and primary caregiver. So and he's really made a huge change. Actually, he's soft as fuck, and he needs to make her, you know, do some of the shit that he made me do. But we'll forget about that. But I just want you to talk a little bit, and I know it's hard for you, about recovering from an abusive relationship, because I know that was really hard for you, but I know it's something that a lot of people struggle with. And I am an advocate for what I just talked about, that staying together is not better for the children, because seeing your parents in a terrible relationship is not a healthy model. Yeah. And I took it into some of my relationships of the way my dad treated you, and it was not the way to be.
Just so for your listeners and for Cameron, I just want to make clear what Henry's talking about abuse. It was emotional abuse.
Yeah.
So he was never physically abusive to me, nor the kids that I know of. I mean, Henry never shared. I don't know if they ever had anything. But so the emotional abuse can just be just as damaging as physical abuse. It's just that you could visually see, you know, the physical. And I'm not going to sit here and make excuses for either of our behavior, you know, and why he would do what he did or why I did what I did. But I do know that he had a really rough childhood, and that his mother and he did not get along really well. So for him to be a friend to a woman goes back to that attachment and trust. And that's why I keep sharing Eric Erickson's stages of development. I know it sounds crazy, but you know, as I read that, I see Mike in there a lot. I see what I went through in there a lot. And I think it helps a person to understand why you become the type of person you are. For me, I just had to come to terms with it, even though I know this man loved me very much, that he would never treat me the way I needed to be valued. So once I figured out that I had a value that I needed, it was a need, and he wasn't fulfilling that value, I was able to comfortably say to him, you know, I think we're at a crossroads here, and we just need to live our lives happily ever after apart. I don't think I make you happy. And that was my conversation with him. And he said, you know, I guess I agree with that. And I go, yeah, I go, there's got to be somebody out there that will, you know, fill your boat up. I mean, geez, if I'm not the one, I'm okay with that, you know? But you're not filling my boat up either. So there you go. So let's just get on with it and just become friends. And that's easier said than done in the beginning, because, you know, no matter what, I mean, we're talking 30 years being together, 25 married. So that's a long time you're with somebody. You've got a whole story you put together with that person. So to let go of the story and give it an ending is hard. You know, it's kind of like losing somebody that's passed away. And, you know, and this could be losing somebody to addiction. I mean, loss is loss. It doesn't matter whether it's death, addiction, workaholic. Loss is loss. And I wanted to feel some attachment with a person that I was going to spend the rest of my life with. And I didn't feel that attachment. And
but she found him. Hey-o. Shout out Terry Rock.
Yeah.
Shout out Terry.
Yep. And although I have to say I was very reticent in the beginning of even having another relationship, because, you know, you go through something like this and you have a son who's an alcoholic and you have a father who's an alcoholic. And now you're kind of like, I kind of like living by myself. Yeah. Kind of fun. You know, I don't have to answer to anybody. So, we can really shout out to him, Terry, for that, because he's the most patient person I've come across in my lifetime. I don't even know how.
And he needed that patience
from this guy.
He needed that for you to come around and heal.
Yeah, because I had some years to recover for sure. I would say, with my dad, it took me. He recovered on my 20th birthday. I was 28 when I forgave him. It was on December 28th when I turned 28. I said, hey, Dad, by the way, I forgive you and I love you a lot. And he goes, you don't know what that means to me. He goes, thanks for letting me know. And I said, absolutely. I go, I'm ready to move forward. I come to terms with it. Boom. Here we go. And then, you know, fast forward.
What a blessing that you got to do that before he passed away, too.
Exactly. I'm super happy I got to do that.
For both of you guys.
Yeah. And then with your dad, same thing, you know, a couple of years into it, of our separation, you know, I think he was probably angry and I was just kind of, trying to find my way. We had Katie, the grandchild, and then your sister was getting married. And I didn't want our turmoil to get in the way of the relationship that we could have with our children. We brought two beautiful souls into this world. I wanted to continue it that way. And, you know, at this point, Henry was starting to struggle. And I said, I think we could do better if we became team Sheridan over, you know, team alone and alone, you know. And so that's what we did. We worked together on research and helping Henry come to the other side. And I think finally the last place we moved him away from California to West Virginia. And of course, none of us wanted that because, you know, I love having Henry around us. But we think it was one of the best ways for him to get a fresh start. And he really took to it. I mean, that community has been supportive of his recovery. I can't say better things about what's going on for my son at this point. I am so happy he made it to the other side, and he's going to have his bumps. I have a cousin who currently had a bump, but he is 59, I want to say 58 or 59, David.
David, so, shout out David. He's a listener.
Yeah.
Shout out David.
Yeah. So he's recovered and he's had his bumps, but he also has a family that hasn't disowned him and they love him and they're supportive. And right away, everybody rallies around him to, hey, you know, that doesn't work out for you. And he figures it out right after, you know, one mishap. And he's hit a couple of bumps. So I'm not going to say for all those people out there who have recovered that you're not going to hit a bump. Your bump could be different than other bumps. But I am going to say your life is better when you've recovered. I do think Henry is the happier person at this point. You know, and he's got a full life now and he's found love for himself. He's found a way to love others. And Mackenzie and I noticed it, especially the last couple of years, that he has definitely become more available as a person. And we enjoy that. We enjoy being around him again. It's like we got the old Henry back that, you know, I knew when he was a child. So there's hope for people, you know. I don't want people to give up because the beginning is hard. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, I'm not going to say it's a cakewalk. It's no cakewalk for sure.
You know, you have a lot of really great insights, and you naturally kind of preach what we talk about here. you know, the, I'm going to go way back. I know there was a lot said there, but that verbal abuse, that emotional abuse, I think personally is worse. That mental anguish, I'd rather have that because I've been in abusive relationships where girlfriends have slapped me and things like that. Like and I've had them where it's been the opposite, where it's all mental and it's these mind games. The anguish from that is way worse. But what I wanted to highlight here was how there's a little principle that I live by is who's watering your roots, right? Mm-hmm. And you had this kind of awakening like, hey, my roots aren't getting watered around here. And then you took a great little nugget from your son. You moved your space and you took it. You set a boundary and you moved your space. And there's one thing that is super beautiful about the Sheridan family is that you guys were able to do what you said. You came together on a united front, regardless of what the past, regardless of what had happened. And now you do have this new beautiful dynamic, right? Mm-hmm. Like Deb, you're off. You're remarried, and you have a very kind, patient husband now. And Mike's changed his ways, and Max got her kids, and everybody's happy. And Henry is about to get married. And see, throughout all of this crazy, you know, rigmarole of shit and trauma and madness, there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And there's one thing I wanted to say before I forget about it, because Henry and I have drank a few brain cells away. I love your mindset on giving people grace. I think that's absolutely fantastic. And I want to give you some grace, and I want you to give yourself some grace, Deb, because you've been through a lot from this story. And you've taken it on the chin. And it's been very admirable, and it's been really fun for me to sit here and listen to. And I'm sorry, that's kind of been a rant, but wonderful. This is a really great conversation.
I appreciate that a lot. And I do think it's important for people to know that struggle is real. And yes. If you don't have support and love, and like you said, the united front that Mike and I have formed together with McKinsey and Henry now, we're stronger than ever, you know, and better for it, I think. And I carry that with me all the time. And I know Henry's done this. And if I see homeless people out there, I get food for them, you know, or I'll get them something to eat. I do not give money to homeless people, but I will do food. And, you know, I just don't know what they've gone through. And I kind of reading this book right now, and there's a homeless person in the book and the story. And I find it kind of fascinating because I'm like, you know, these people that write these things, they had to go through this because, man, this is real. You know, I'm reading this and I'm going, I know this. I understand what this guy's talking about, you know? So it's just so crazy how many people's lives parallel and the stories that come behind it. And going back to your family history and finding that on both sides of my family, there was alcoholism. And then we have children. And so not my children yet, but my parents' children. And I was telling Henry, as I looked at the family tree and I kind of drew a picture for myself today, the men on both sides were alcoholics except for one. And that was my brother. He was the first boy that didn't become an alcoholic in the family tree. And I find that really fascinating. There is one girl that is alcoholic, probably doesn't really admit that they have a drinking problem, but out of, you know, the family tree. But most of it has been male dominated. So it's kind of crazy. I wish there were more studies about that. But I gave Henry the knowledge. We took him to a doctor and had him tested. And I said, you just take this information with you and know that not only are you genetically predisposed to have a addiction problem, but you know, it can turn into something if you don't acknowledge it, you know. And I never tested myself, you guys, and I wonder, could I become an addict? I don't know. I've just never
probably not anymore.
I've just never desired it, but I also I'm kind of tuned into it, maybe because I didn't like my father when he was like that, so I don't want to be that, you know. Yeah. So it just might
I think be- it goes either way for children of addicts, and you were definitely the let's stay away from that because that doesn't look like a good time. I heard this really great quote, and I was going to save it for another episode, but I think it applies perfectly right now, and it's from our homegirl, Brené Brown, and she says, genetics load the gun, but trauma pulls the trigger. So people ask, is it genetics? Is it trauma? Is it nature? Is it nurture? And the idea is basically that it's both.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that applies to me for sure. The genetics were there and the trauma was there.
Yeah,
I have a very important question, Mom. I have a very important question because we've been having this thing with Cameron's mom. Did you want to have sexual relations with John Travolta?
No, never ever did I want to have sexual relations with John Travolta. Although he is a badass.
Was there any celebrity male figure that we who wanted to have guy? Sexual relations with? Yeah, who was your guy?
Well, I kind of liked Bruce Willis.
There we go.
There you go. That's why I liked him.
As my new hero.
There you go.
And then there's Alexander, you know, the Tarzan. I mean, he was pretty badass.
Oh, Skarsgård?
Yes.
Is that Tracy's guy? Yeah. Okay. So we have two questions that we always ask, and yours will be a little different but the same. And I'll start with this. What is your favorite part about me getting sober?
Oh, my gosh. I can only name one.
As many as you like.
So when Henry was, and I'm going off a little bit, but when Henry was five, he wasn't in kindergarten yet, and we were driving somewhere, and he grabs my hand, and he says, "Mom, don't you just love this time? It's me and you. We don't have Dad or Mackenzie. It's just me and you, you know?" And I love his little hand grabbing my hand. So fast forward, you getting sober. I still carry that moment to now. I compare the two. I have my little guy back, even though you're a big guy, but you still are my little guy no matter what. So there's that. Got you back.
That's beautiful.
Me blushing and at the edge of tears for the listeners.
Yeah.
It's like when your mom calls you a big, strong man, makes you feel good.
You are a big, strong man. I mean, you really are. That was beautiful, Deb. And then here's our second question. What would you tell a loved one or of an addict who is struggling right now?
There's hope. Okay. And there's definitely somebody out there that believes, if you don't believe, that can help you get to the other side. There's a lot of support out there. Just let people support you if that's what you need. And I'm talking emotional support, because I think that's what Henry didn't know if he was going to get, and he got it. You know, money's not going to buy you sober.
No.
Right. But support is, and a listener. So I say, you know, thank you to all those counselors out there, and then to you guys for your podcast, because you just never know what life you're going to touch and who's going to find this necessary that day. And I thank you for paying it forward to your community, and that the person who's listening to this day who might be struggling, we hope that, you know, we made you feel better, because maybe you just need to pick up that phone and call your mom or dad or an aunt or uncle. Or in my case, when I ran away, a neighbor who moved out to a farm. There's somebody out there that, you know, has got your back.
Well, I thought it was so cool, and I got a little teary-eyed and choked up too, that your dad ended his life as a counselor and sponsoring people. And that's also, you know, here we are on my podcast doing the same thing. So it's pretty cool.
Very cool.
Well, I want to thank you, Mom, not just for coming on here, but also for always supporting me and being my rock and always being there for me, and believing that I could come out the other side. And it feels really good to be sitting here and talking about how I did. And you've always been incredible. And I hope you know it never was your fault, because I know you questioned that for a long time. It never was, and you were always amazing. So I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you so much. Of course, I love you too. The way I always end this part, Cam, is I love you more.
There you go. There you go. That's perfect. And I can't give you a better sound off than Henry just did, but it was fantastic having you on the show, and we will have to have you back to do that Erickson thing. I'd really like to
love to talk about that more. And I think it would really help a lot of listeners who could be struggling through a stage in their life. It points you in a direction of, oh, I have got some clarity now. That makes sense why I had struggled here, because this happened, you know, and to have success in one stage to move on to the next. Doesn't that make sense to you guys? I mean, absolutely. If you fail on a stage, you kind of get stuck in that, you know. So I would love to talk about that a little bit more, and loved being on the show today.
It was all right.
Yeah.
Well, we love you very much, and I hope you keep that wonderful shine that you have, Deb. You take care, all right?
Thank you.
Love you.
Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye.
You doing okay, pal?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I think I'm okay.
That was a beautiful episode, man.
Oh.
That was a real beautiful episode. That was a real beautiful episode. And I think it's time for me to get someone on here from my side so I can start crying and stuff.
Ashley.
Ashley's coming. Ashley's coming. It's in the works. We have it lined up. So Ash is coming. But that was beautiful, man. Getting Deb to open up, you know, it's so cool to hear other people's stories, but then it's really cool to hear, like, you know, your mom's story, right? Like, it's so interesting to me. And to see how everybody has their own little issues that you would never know, right? Like if you saw Deb in person, like I have multiple times, right? You know, she's this happy person. Like, but I never would have known. I never would have known any of that. And it's crazy how we can hide that shit. So yeah, dude, beautiful stuff, dude. Beautiful stuff. Way to be brave again.
Thank you. And yeah. It's interesting. I always learn something from all of our guests, especially even the ones I know. And that rang true with my mom. You know, there was stuff in there that we had never really talked about before. So that was interesting. And another thing that was interesting is how she didn't tell my dad that her dad was an alcoholic. And he told her, then she told him and he couldn't believe it. And I just want people to know, this is an interesting point, because people see me, this has happened a lot, and like even Kristen, like, I can't imagine you being that way. I can't imagine you being an alcoholic. I can't imagine
you. All the time.
And the thing is that I think is the important point to drill in is that we don't look like anything. We don't aren't some specific. People picture the bum on the fucking ground or whatever. Yeah. We look like your friends, your family, your brother, your sister. We are just normal fucking people that lost our way and had some trouble. So if you look at me and think, I can't imagine you being an addict, give that same fucking grace to the person that you see who's struggling, because we're all just normal fucking people. We don't look any kind of way.
Dude. That is the hottest flames you have ever dropped on this podcast, bro. Like straight up, like, send it off, dude. Let's go home. That is so true, man. I have had that conversation. Be like, I couldn't see you doing that. Be like, yeah, dude. Like I mentioned on here, be like, if you had your purse sitting over there, I'm stealing it, dude. Like straight up, I'm drinking all your alcohol. I'm gonna try to fuck your wife. Like you know what I mean? Like there's crazy stuff going on when I drink. And I just don't see it. I don't see it. So yeah, dude, what a great parallel, bro. You could sit here and look me straight in the eye, and then you can go and you can see that homeless person out there with a bottle. We are the same person. We are the same person. There's no difference. There's no difference. And what a great way to tie that in, dude. That it's hard to say that in the beginning when you're getting sober, though. Be like, I'm not that homeless person. You know what I mean? But the more time you get, it's like wait, I am that homeless person. I am that struggling person. That person is always me.
We're just people. We're not bad people trying to get good. We're good people trying to get better. Hey-o!
Boom.
All right. Check out our sponsors in the links. Go download the Podbeats app. It's fantastic. And also, I didn't mention in the commercial, but the insurance lab is nationwide. He's based in California, but he's certified in like 48 states. So no matter where you are, give him a call and let him tell him the dude sent you for a special little discount. And yeah, support those who support us. And thanks everybody for being here and for listening.
Yes, absolutely. And it was a really great episode. I want to thank Deb one more time because she was just absolutely fantastic, completely transparent, very raw. And I hope you guys all stuck around to listen to all of that because there was a lot of gems in there. And as long as you don't have anything else, Hen, I will finish it like I always do. I love you, brother. I love sitting here watching you cry. It's great, dude. I get to sit here like a mischievous man.
I love you too, Cam. And remember, don't be afraid to cry in front of hundreds of listeners. Men have feelings too. And be yourself and fuck what they think.
I really don't even have a zipper for this one.
Later, dude.
No zipper.